This is the State of Things, live from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. The state legislature's decision to reject Medicaid expansion is already having serious repercussions here in the Triad. The HealthServe Community Health Clinic in Greensboro will close at the end of August. About 20,000 low-income patients in the Triad are going to be affected. Clinic operators say there are many reasons for the closure, among them a loss of funding from Guilford County and Cone Health. But the General Assembly's decision not to expand Medicaid eligibility is a decisive factor. Jeff DeBerry is WUNC's Greensboro Bureau Chief, and he's here to tell us more about news in the Triad. Jeff, welcome back. Good to have you here, as always.
Good to see you, Frank.
Tell us about the clinic, first of all. What is it? Who does it serve?
It serves, for the most part, an underserved population of folks who largely do not have health insurance, folks, many of whom are working and do have full-time jobs or full-time hours, but the health coverage that they have is inadequate. There's about 8,500 people that have used this clinic as a regular place for care, and about, as you said, 20,000 people each year that turn to HealthServe have turned to HealthServe for prescriptions and treatment and all sorts of things.
Are there any other clinics doing about the same thing in the area?
There are. HealthServe is part of a larger network that has half a dozen clinics, but they're in different parts of the city, so now folks are going to have to go elsewhere, and it's not as though they were just helping a few hundred people. We're talking about a large number of folks. So where do those people turn to, be it other clinics, be it the emergency room? That's a major question.
20,000 is a lot to absorb.
Yep.
From those other clinics. So why are they closing?
They're closing, as you mentioned, because they lost $1 million from the Guilford County Commissioners. They lost $1 million from Cone Health, from Moses Cone Hospital. And the state's decision not to expand Medicaid, what that did was the vast majority of people that use HealthServe were not on Medicaid, but the expansion of Medicaid would have placed them under that umbrella. Mm. So what it would have done is generated more of a revenue stream for the clinic to continue to operate. The clinic had been planning on that, banking on that happening. So that didn't happen, and in conjunction with losing $2 million of funding annually, they just couldn't go on.
Well, tell us about the decision by Cone and by the county to cut the funding.
It's not entirely clear why they backed out when they did. And obviously one of the questions is, by pulling out that funding, you know, how much is it really going to cost Moses Cone in the long run? How much is it going to cost Cone Health if they see an influx of 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 patients over the next whatever month, 2 months, 6 months? So it's not entirely clear why that funding was cut. I think there was some apprehension from the county commissioners that they were going to be asked to give more funding, and this was almost preemptively backing out of the funding.
Right, and as you say, those people are going to be in the emergency room now at Cone Health.
That's one of the most places they'll turn to. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about – so what about now any reversal, any chance that each, you know, each of these partners and donors was looking to the other? Maybe they were counting on Medicaid expansion, and now they'll reconsider. Any possibilities?
So in talking with Merle Green, who's the director of public health in Guilford County, it was hush-hush. It was kind of dancing around, but she said she's optimistic that something is going to happen in the coming months. And when I pushed her on that, she really was not forthcoming on details, but – she's hoping that, you know, some of these players, these entities are going to get together and have another option for these folks.
Meanwhile, the clinic shuts its doors at the end of this month.
Yes, the last patients actually were seen on Friday. So no more patients the rest of the month, and it will officially close on August 30th.
All right, well, we will stay tuned to that. A story that we have been tuned into over the months has been the story about Alcoa and its dams along a river that is now in dispute. The State Department Administration, the State Department of Administration, is filing suit against Alcoa. So give us the background on that.
So Alcoa owns and operates 4 hydroelectric dams along the Yadkin River. The dams generate electricity, and for years that electricity was used to provide power to a factory in Baden, North Carolina, which is about an hour and a half northeast of Charlotte, and that factory employed several hundred North Carolina employees. Well, the factory is now closed, and the electricity is sold on the open market, and Alcoa makes money off of that. The state, meanwhile, Alcoa is pursuing another 50-year license to operate these dams. as they're doing all this, the state has filed this lawsuit to try to get more involved, try to reap the benefits in a different way or in a greater way than they have been. The state feels that as the power is going elsewhere, it is now, this is their chance, as the 50-year license is kind of on the table, for them to force Alcoa's hand, to put a little bit of pressure on them, and to basically say, you know, we want to be a part of this. We want some more money. So the lawsuit is filing suit over submerged lands, over the beds of the river. The state says, you, Alcoa, do not own the riverbeds, although Alcoa has said for years that it does own the riverbeds. And that's at the heart of this thing, who owns the riverbeds.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think it's the first time, won't it be, that the courts now are being asked to decide who does own the river?
Well, it depends what court. The lawsuit was filed in state court. Alcoa says that this is not a state issue, that this is a federal issue, and Alcoa is going to ask that this lawsuit be moved to federal court. 3 years ago, the Supreme Court heard a similar case in which the state of Montana sued a power company in Montana about who owned the beds of a river in Montana. Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that ruled against the state 9-0 in that case. So Alcoa believes that precedent is on its side.
What would happen if they lost the license then? What about the dams? Do they continue to operate? Do they have to be upfitted?
So the 50-year license went from 58 to 2008, give or take a year. And Alcoa has continued to operate the dams and sell the electricity on a year-to-year basis. By themselves, the dams really aren't worth that much. They need a considerable amount of upkeep and improvements. With the 50-year license, the thought from some is that Alcoa would sell the dams along with the 50-year license for about $500 million. Without the license, selling the dams is not worth nearly as much.
And the state is really behind this. In fact, the governor has said he believes the river belongs to the state.
He has, and I guess just a footnote, it's one of these interesting things where we can draw a similarity between Governor McCrory and the past governor, Governor Perdue. They both were opposed to this, and they're going to fight this. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here.
Let me ask you about a story that appeared in the Winston-Salem Journal. This is up in Forsyth County. Apparently, DWIs, those arrested for DWI, are walking because apparently the county doesn't have anybody doing blood tests anymore.
So the blood testing, as I understand it, takes place here in Greensboro at a state crime lab. Normally there are three toxicologists, and for whatever reason, there is only one toxicologist right now. Somebody left, somebody retired, whatever the case is, there are two vacant positions. And there is now a significant backlog of blood testing as it pertains to DWI cases, to the point where they have dismissed several DWI cases, a handful of DWI cases, because they haven't been able to push the evidence through fast enough, and the judges just said, you know, you had to have done it by now. This thing's dismissed.
Yeah, your right to a speedy trial is actually being threatened by these. So we'll keep an eye on that one as well. And you have reported on a story here in Guilford County, a pilot program to get tablet computers into the hands of all middle school students. Tell us about that.
This is the largest technological education initiative in the country, which I think is pretty neat. It's funded by a $30+ million federal grant, and the goal for Guilford County is to put tablet computers in the hands of every middle school student. They're going to do about 13,000 tablets in the next couple of weeks and another 4,000 next year. And this, the county believes, is the new wave of education. It's going to even the playing field. It's going to be a great way for teachers to reach students in different kinds of ways.
I taught 7th grade for a while, and I didn't think it was wise to put anything in the hands of middle schoolers. But I get it. I get it. This is new technology. There's been some concern about how this might play out, though.
I think that one of the big questions is, how are the teachers going to teach? How are they going to maximize the technology? Are they going to utilize it the best way they can? And even if they do, does that really make a difference? Is technology better in the classroom? And, you know, one of the concerns is there going to be less reading and writing? Because, you know, reading and writing is really, you know, the backbone to a lot of what is going on in school. You got to be able to do that. So it's been interesting. I've talked to a half dozen teachers in the last week or so, and I think the prevailing thought at this point is were enthusiastic about it. We were very comfortable with it. But exactly how they're going to teach this lesson, or exactly how they're going to go about that part of the earth science chapter, is still up in the air. They're still feeling this thing out. And the man who's running this program says it's going to be a learning process.
Teacher training is part of it. The other part of it, I guess, is that the evidence is still mixed on whether or not high technology really advances educational goals.
And there is... there is debate in the educational community about what it does for test scores and what ultimately is the benefit of tablet computers and technology in the classroom.
Well, I guess we're going to come back, Jeff, because we've got a lot to stay tuned and come back and revisit. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us. Jeff DeBerry, WUNC's Greens Bureau Chief on the state of things. Just ahead, poet Terry Kennedy is going to preview his new book, New River Breakdown, and we have the Greensboro Band 5 with us today. We're going to talk with them later, but first, they're going to play some music for us as we move from segment to segment on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. 5.
1, 2, 3. So I sing a song for my Deba, my father, Mandela.
Mandela.
So I sing a song for my Deba, Mandela.
Ah. 30 years and we see one man march for take freedom hand. Freedom fighters, he will guide us. Love, it can unite. 10 generations, one choice, one nation, one voice. Mandela, take me home, take me home.
So I sing a song for my Deba, my father, Mandela.
Mandela.
So I sing a song for my Deba,
Deba.
Mandela. Yeah, yeah. Forever we will sing. Forever for Africa's king. We remember what you're fighting for, and we remember that you fight a war, and we remember that you fight no more. So I sing a song that's for my deeper.